That's Not What I Meant, The Sociolinguistics of Everyday Conversation, Lecture 5. Indirectness, the ways and whys we communicate meaning, not in so many words.
Among Americans, indirectness has a bad rap. We tend to associate directness with honesty, which we think is good, and indirectness with dishonesty, which, of course, we think is bad. But when we talk to each other, the needs for power and solidarity, which I described in the last lecture, the needs for involvement and independence, you might say, actually give us many reasons for not saying exactly what we mean. There are many reasons for not saying what we mean in so many words. A linguist who has written about this, Robin Lakoff, mentions two: rapport and self-defense. In other words, the very lovely, positive feeling of being understood without saying just what you mean, and self-defense, the ability to back off if it doesn't sit well with the other person and say, I never really meant that. Related to these motives are the goals of saving face for the other person or avoiding confrontation. Let me talk a little bit first about the payoff in self-defense. If you say something and it's not met with agreement, it's met with disagreement, you can deny having said it or meant it. So here's an example. A couple go into a restaurant. They look at the menu, and the man says, I think I'll have the steak. And his wife says, did you notice, dear, they have salmon? You like salmon. And he says, will you please stop criticizing what I eat? And she said, I didn't criticize. I just pointed out something you might like. Because she didn't directly say, I think you should have salmon, I don't think you should have steak, she can back off and say, it isn't what I meant, I didn't say that. Incidentally, and I say what she really meant because I talked to the couple later, and she did acknowledge that she was not happy with his decision to have steak. I pointed out to her, had he said he was going to have the salmon, how likely is it that she would have said, did you notice, dear, they have steak? You like steak. She admitted she wouldn't. But because she said it indirectly, she was able to back off and say, that's not what I meant. Let me say something about the payoff in rapport. Maybe one of the most widespread examples of the payoff in rapport would be what I call the birthday present routine. You want a birthday present that is something you would like, not so much because you need the thing. Well, it might sometimes be because you need the thing in itself, but for most of us, you could go out and buy it for yourself if you wanted. But if a person is close to you, you want the evidence that they understand you well enough to pick a present that you really want and care enough to spend the time going and finding it and buying it for you and wrapping it up. This presents a problem. If you don't say anything at all, you run the risk that the person you're close to won't get you a birthday present that you like. And so many people resort to hints. You drop little hints about what you might like. And then when you get it, you don't feel like you ordered it, like going into a restaurant and ordering what you want for dinner. That doesn't prove that the waiter knows your taste. It just proves that he did what he was told. It does run a risk, though, as all indirectness does, that you may say something that you don't intend as a hint and could be picked up as a hint. So, for example, one woman was saying how much she would like to have work gloves, but when her husband gave her work gloves wrapped for her birthday, that really wasn't her idea of a good birthday present. But the birthday present routine is a classic example of how there's a payoff in rapport if you get what you want without asking directly. A woman was annoyed at a man for fixing himself a snack without offering her any, so he offered her the snack he had just fixed. But she turned it down. She said she wasn't hungry. Well, this didn't make any sense to him. Why was she annoyed if she wasn't hungry? Why didn't she just ask for a snack if she wanted it? And, of course, the payoff that she was looking for wasn't the snack. It was that he cared about her. So she couldn't ask for it. That wasn't the point. Being direct would give her the snack, but it wouldn't give her the payoff in rapport. The payoff in rapport comes when somebody thinks of you without your having to directly ask them to think for you. It's why it doesn't carry the same weight if you say to someone, say, I love you, and they say, I love you. If they're just doing what they're told, it doesn't have that payoff in rapport. There are cultures that operate somewhat more on systems of indirectness than typical American culture does. Greece is one example, and Asian cultures would be even more in the direction of indirectness. But here's an example from Greece. An older woman that I was talking to commented that when she was young woman before she was married, if she heard about a party and she asked her father if she should go to the party, if he said yes, she knew she shouldn't go. If he really approved, he would say, yes, of course you should go. It's something that I call an enthusiasm constraint. She expected that he would be enthusiastic in his telling her to go if he really meant it. Now, this way of interacting may strike many Americans as weird. And again, as I said before, maybe even dishonest or manipulative. Why doesn't he just say directly that he doesn't want her to go? Well, there's a payoff in rapport. He may feel that it's better to have a daughter who does what he wants because she wants to rather than just a daughter who's being obedient. She herself may prefer feeling that she decided on her own not to go because she knew her father wasn't crazy about the idea. That still may feel better to her than being given orders by her father. So there's a payoff in rapport in communicating on this level of indirectness. A question can be an indirect way of opening a negotiation. So you don't risk forcing the other person to reject a suggestion. And I'm going to read an example here from a field note from one of my students. This student's name is Shannon Semler, and this was her description of a conversation that took place between her parents. She wrote, "A few weeks ago, my parents came down to D.C. for Parents Weekend. They wanted to take my sister and me out to dinner, so we all went down to M Street. We weren't sure where we wanted to eat and didn't want to wait too long for a table, so we started walking along M Street and looking in the windows of restaurants. As we passed J. Paul's, my mom asked, 'Do you know this place, Tom?' Without stopping, my dad looked over his shoulder and shrugged, 'No.' We all kept walking, and when we got to the next corner, my dad said, 'So what do you think? Should we keep walking?' My sister and I said we didn't care, but my mom answered, 'That place J. Paul's looked nice, and I think I saw an open table for four.' My dad turned to look at her and asked, 'That place we passed a block back? Why didn't you say something?' 'I did,' she responded. 'No, you didn't,' he almost yelled back. 'So you saw an open table?' 'Yes, I think so,' she replied. He let out a deep sigh as he marched back down the block to J. Paul's, muttering the whole way under his breath about how she should have just said something while we were in front of the restaurant if this was where she wanted to eat. I looked back to see my mom following us, shrugging her shoulders and shaking her head." What you see here is different habits with regard to indirectness when it comes to making a suggestion about a place to eat. It seems clear that Shannon's mother thought that asking directly, "Do you want to eat here? This looks good," might put her husband in the awkward position of rejecting her suggestion. So she started indirectly. "Just raise it for discussion. Have you heard of this? Do you know this place?" He missed it, took it literally, didn't take it as an indirect way of starting a negotiation, just answered the question and walked on. So when he later complained, "Why didn't you say something?" and she said, "I did," the difference was whether raising the question, "Do you know this place, Tom?" was, quote, saying something about whether or not this is a good place to eat. So avoiding the risk of the other person rejecting a suggestion would be another payoff in rapport. Another reason for indirectness would be to avoid hurting somebody's feelings. And this is something that really happened. A man and a woman work in the same place. He was kind of interested in her. She was not interested. So he asked her, "Would you like to go to lunch?" And she said, "No, I'm kind of busy this week." And then he asked again the next week, and she said, "I'm not really feeling that well this week. I think I'm going to skip lunch." And then the third week, he said to her, "You know, I keep asking you, and I don't know whether these reasons are real or if you're just saying it because you don't want to go to lunch." So he was trying to force her to be more direct. And complementary schismogenesis set in. The more insistent he was about getting a direct answer, the more evasive she became. So the third time, she was practically inarticulate. "No, really? No, well, yeah. Huh? No, it's not that." But she didn't go to lunch. And furthermore, was firmer in her opinion that she never wanted to go to lunch with him ever because he was forcing her to be rude. This is a really interesting thing. We often are uncomfortable with people not only because of their style, but because of how their way of talking makes us talk, and we don't want to be that kind of person. So she felt that he was trying to push her to be direct, which to her would be very rude. But her goal in being indirect was to not hurt his feelings when she said that she didn't want to have lunch with him. Sometimes the goal of indirectness is to avoid open conflict. And again, there's a lot of individual and cultural differences as to whether people are uncomfortable about open conflict. Some people would think it's just fine, but some people would be very uncomfortable, and so they use indirectness to avoid it. Some of the most interesting examples of this came up in field notes written by my students about negotiating with their roommates. And so, for example, a roommate who doesn't wash the dishes, one woman reported that she and another roommate put a sign up over the sink, "We love a clean sink," an indirect way of communicating to a roommate that she should wash her dishes. Or if a roommate is leaving her hairdryer out in the bathroom and that irritates the other roommates, one of them asked, "Is that your hairdryer, Nan?" And there were many, many examples of this that came in my students' field notes, but I'm going to read you one in particular because it was really amusing. This field note was written by Emily Nash. It's a wonderful illustration of how three women roommates use indirectness in a very harmonious way. It's very effective. Here's how it goes. "In my apartment, my roommates and I often have dinner together. Though we never formally talked about it, there's an unspoken consensus that on any given night, the person who contributed the least to preparing the dinner is responsible for cleaning up. The other night, one of my roommates and I made grilled teriyaki chicken with vegetables and rice." Kind of makes you want to eat there, doesn't it? "At first, my other roommate said she didn't want to have dinner with us. Apparently, she wasn't very hungry yet and wanted to take a nap first. Then, as dinner was almost ready, she reemerged in the kitchen. 'Are you sure you don't want to eat with us?' we asked. 'There's plenty of food for the three of us.' She agreed, so I added another place setting to the table, and we sat down to dinner. Over dinner, we talked about the chicken dish and how it was prepared. The roommate who had been napping while we made dinner said the chicken was especially good and wanted to know how we made it. My other roommate volunteered that it was made with a really great marinade she found at Safeway and then described that she had cooked it on the George Foreman grill. By speaking up, she established her role as head chef for the night and took credit for putting together a tasty meal." You might say that she framed herself as the head chef. "I had chopped the vegetables, boiled the rice, and set the table, but none of these contributions seemed as interesting to talk about as finding out about the mystery marinade, so I didn't say anything. When dinner was done, I cleared the plates and sat down on the sofa to do some reading, assuming, by our unspoken rule, that it was the late addition to our dinner clan who was responsible for doing the dishes. Within 5 minutes, I heard my roommate's voice from the kitchen. In a rising, cheery tone, she said, 'Hey, Em, did you help cook dinner?' This question was interesting to me for two reasons. First, because I knew the intention of her question was not to find out whether I had cooked dinner. If she cared, she would have asked during dinner, but rather to recruit help in cleaning up." And by the way, I would make a comment here that it's possible that her roommate really didn't know for sure what part she had played. So I'm not 100% convinced that it was an indirect request for help. I think it could honestly have been the roommate wondering whether she was shirking by not helping or was really entitled not to help because she had helped cook dinner. And this is one of the risks involved in indirectness. There is always the risk that the meaning won't be lost and the meaning is open to interpretation. That's the positive thing about indirectness. That's where the defensive payoff comes in. The meaning is not determined. It is open. And so you can later back off. But the negative side of that is that sometimes the meaning can really be missed. So she goes on. Second, the implication underlying her actual question sounded like an accusation, though in reality, I'm sure she wasn't trying to accuse me of anything. What she said sounded like, "I know you didn't make dinner either, so the least you can do is help me with the dishes," when I'm sure her intended message was more like, "Do you mind helping me with the dishes even though it's not your turn?" And again, I would say it's not really obvious what she meant. She could have meant one or the other. But Emily goes on. Her indirectness in posing this question was irritating but understandable. And this is actually quite common. It's not at all unusual for people to be irritated by indirectness if they don't like the meaning that they perceive. She didn't want to come out and ask for help directly because she knew it was unequivocally her turn. Instead, she dropped a hint by asking a question whose answer suggested something to both of us about doing the dishes. That way, she could test the waters and see if I was willing to help out without coming out and asking. And that's the benefit of indirectness, that if your suggestion does not meet with approval, the other person does not have to reject you outright. And Emily concludes, luckily, I could pretty easily read what she was trying to ask and didn't mind helping her with the dishes. My response was, yeah, sorta, but I can help you with the dishes if you want. And I did. So that's an example of three roommates who are operating on a system of indirectness. And although, now, do you want to say it was totally successful? Well, Emily was slightly irritated by her roommates using this indirect method, or maybe irritated that she felt her roommate was asking her to help when she shouldn't. But all in all, it was a pretty successful interaction using indirectness. Now, people who don't like indirectness can be very irritated by it. They think it's manipulative, and they are often critical of it. I want to give an example of another kind of indirectness that might not immediately fit your model of what you think of indirectness to sound like. And this comes from a young man in one of my classes. His name was Jeff Civilico. And he's also writing about a roommate situation. But look at how different this use of indirectness is. This is Jeff's description. He says, I could not help but overhear a brief exchange between my apartment mates this week. I was doing something or other in my room with the door open. One of my apartment mates was in his room with the door closed, cramming for his organic chemistry test the next day. My other two apartment mates were watching the World Series in the common room, passionately yelling at every play. This went on for a while until the one studying opened the door and yelled out, Guys, can you keep it down? I'm studying here. The response was, No! The one studying followed with a quick, Go to hell! The conversation concluded with a remark from the common room, F you. They didn't say F, they actually said the word. And with that, the problem was solved. They lowered the volume on the television and mellowed out considerably. No one was mad, just a typical way of problem solving in Henley 60, Henley being the name of the dorm, 60 being their room. This is really interesting to me because it may not fit the model of what you think of as indirectness, that is someone asking you to do something but not saying in so many words that they want you to do it, but it actually is a kind of indirectness. The boys did not say what they meant. They said no, they said worse, but then they went ahead and did comply with the request. It's indirect because the meaning, the literal meaning, was not the actual intention and effect of what they said. But it's also a kind of indirectness. Anytime a style is shared, you can say there's a payoff in rapport. The sense of rapport comes from communicating effectively. It's that wonderful vision of sanity that you have when you and the person you're talking to agree on what conversational style you're going to use and how it's going to work. There's a very interesting interplay of power and solidarity here. On the one hand, if somebody tells somebody else what to do, you could say they're pushing you around. They're putting you in a one-down position. Turn it down. You have to turn it down. They're the police. You're the miscreants. They're the mother. You're the kid. So they avoid that implication by verbally protesting. No, the hell with you. F you. We're not going to listen. But then they do comply. So they get the power and the solidarity, and it's intertwined in a very interesting way. Those who tend to use one style of directness or indirectness tend to find other styles either irritating, as we already saw, manipulative, or sometimes even inscrutable, they just don't get it, or dishonest. So, for example, another young man commented that his roommate came into his room and said, are you starting a bottle collection? And he was genuinely puzzled and wondered what his roommate meant. And then what he realized was that the roommate was referring to the bottles that he was saving up for recycling. and the roommate meant, take your recycling out, don't let it pile up. And he actually resented that. He would have preferred that the person directly say to him, take your recycling out. So that's the kind of irritation thing. Sometimes you can actually miss somebody's meaning. So here's an example. Again, from a student's experience that he reported in a field note, but I'll just tell it to you rather than reading it. The young man came from a part of the country which was very cold in the winter and there was a lot of snow. He was home for Christmas vacation. He and his mother were sitting at the kitchen table one morning and they looked out and the mother commented on how high the snow was and how long it was going to take to shovel it. Well, he could see as well as she could, so he looked out the window and he agreed with her. Then they finished breakfast and he went to his room and turned on the television and began watching television. And he gradually became aware that there were noises in the house, that the mother was kind of banging things around. And finally, she stormed into his room and accused him of being a lazy, no good kid. And she said, here I am cleaning the house. The least you could have done would be to shovel the snow like I asked you to. He objected to this, not because he felt he shouldn't shovel the snow, but because she felt he hadn't asked her to. So for her, calling attention to the snow was self-evidently an indirect way of suggesting to him that he should shovel it. Now, you could say that as a young adult, he should have known to shovel the snow without being asked. That's another thing. But there was this very difference in their understanding of indirectness that she felt it was self-evident that she had asked him to do it and he hadn't done it. And he felt it was self-evident that she had not asked him to do it. So he had actually missed that indirect meaning. In some cases, people understand the intention, but they resent the indirectness. And here's an example. This was actually took place between two women. They had agreed that they were going to subscribe together to a theater series. So one of them went to get the tickets. Now, that one was actually nearsighted and needed to sit close up so that she could see. Well, she called her friend from the theater. She said, I've just been to the box office and I'm trying to get our subscription, but the only seats they have available are in the back and I really wouldn't be able to see from there. So what should I do? So she was being indirect in that it was self-evident that they shouldn't get the tickets. There's no way the friend was going to say, I don't care if you can't see, get them anyway, I can see, and that's all that counts. So it was clear they weren't going to get the tickets. But the woman who called her friend, from my point of view, I would say was being indirect in that she laid out all the evidence and was allowing her friend to draw the conclusion, thinking back again like the spouse who comes home and says, my friend's in town, I'd like to have dinner with him or her, would that be okay with you? Pretty much knows that the spouse is going to say, of course, go to dinner, but just thinks you might prefer to feel like you have some option there. So that woman felt that her friend would prefer to feel that she had an option, would not like being presented with a fait accompli. You know, that's the way it is, no tickets, sorry. But what happened in this case was that the second friend actually got angry. And she felt, why are you making me be the bully? You're manipulative. Obviously, we can't get the tickets. Just say so. And so those who don't tend to use indirectness in this way can feel that people who do use it are manipulative. This word manipulative is very interesting. We tend to accuse other people of being manipulative. I've never heard a person say, I'm manipulative. I think we often use the word manipulative to describe the way we feel in reaction to the way another person is speaking. And we usually use it when we feel the way the person is speaking is not the way we would expect a person to speak in that situation. And so it comes across to us as being manipulative. In some cases, you understand the intention of the person who's being indirect, but you still resent it. And here's another example that actually happened. A woman and man was supposed to meet for dinner. And the woman called the guy and said, I'm going to cancel our dinner date because I'm just too tired. And he felt offended by that. He felt that saying you're too tired is too direct. He would have appreciated a little bit of hypocrisy, you might say. If she was really too tired, she should have said, I don't feel well. Or maybe I've got a stomachache. She should have come up with a reason that was significant enough to let him down. To simply say, I'm too tired, it's direct, it's honest, but it kind of has a meta message, you might say, not the meaning of the words, but what it means that I say these words in this way at this time. That's a definition of meta message. Saying I'm just too tired sends a meta message. I really don't care about you that much. So I'm going to blow it off for a very minimal reason. So people who are indirect can resent people who are direct because they can see the directness as rude. Confusion about directness and indirectness often comes up in the workplace. So here's an example that actually happened to a young man at work. He was an intern in an office over the summer, and the secretary gave him a task to rearrange books in a bookshelf. So he did it the way it seemed to him self-evident was the right way to do it. He took the books out of the bookshelf and was sorting them on the ground, making piles that he would later put back in the bookshelf. And she commented, the secretary commented, that this was making a rather unsightly scene in the area, and he agreed that it was. Well, he could see as well as she could. A little bit later, the boss came in, took one look, and said, "Oh, don't do it that way. Put the books in the shelf and rearrange them within the shelf." And the secretary said, "Yeah, I told him that too, but he didn't listen to me." He was really incensed because he felt the secretary had not told him that. And again, it was because the secretary's comment, just like the mother's comment about the snow, the secretary clearly felt that calling attention to it being unsightly was a self-evident way of telling him he shouldn't do it that way. He shouldn't create an unsightly situation in a public area. But because he wasn't attuned to the indirect communication, he didn't hear it. When the boss came in and said directly, "Don't do it that way," then he could hear it. So in that situation, he preferred the directness. You may have noticed that in quite a few of the examples I've been giving, it seems to be the women who tend to be more indirect and men who tend to be more direct. That sometimes is the case when it comes to getting people to do things, making decisions. But there are many, many situations in which men as well as women are likely to be indirect. Some of those situations involve hierarchy. So, for example, I got a letter after the publication of one of my books from a man who was an officer in the Navy. And he commented that indirectness is very widespread in the military. Now, this might come as a surprise because we tend to think of military officers barking orders. That may be the case in boot camp, but it doesn't seem to be the norm in most military situations. So this is what he described. He said that when he was a midshipman early on in his career, he was in a class and the officer at the front of the room said something, made a statement like, "It's cold in here," and the young men all agreed. And then he went back and he said it again, and they still agreed. And he said, "Now, wait a minute, young men. When I say it's cold in here, I'm not looking for your agreement. I'm looking for you to do something about it. Now let's try it again. It's cold in here." And all the midshipmen jumped up and went to the window and tried to fix the situation. The man who wrote to me commented this was a lesson that stood us in very good stead in our military careers. In other words, when the rank is self-evident, the person who is higher in rank doesn't have to be direct in giving orders. He or she can be indirect, that is, simply describe a situation, and the subordinate person realizes that it's their job to do whatever's necessary to fix the problem. Otherwise, they wouldn't be told about it. Now, this does present a risk. Indirectness always presents a risk where people may pick up hints that were really not intended as hints, so they may go fix a situation when they really were not expected to and not wanted to. Another example, Charlotte Lindy is a linguist who has studied cockpit conversations, that is, recordings of the conversations that take place between pilots and co-pilots in airplanes. And she observed that it's not infrequent. She has looked at the cockpit conversations preceding accidents, both in real accidents, tragic ones in some cases, and virtual accidents that would have happened as a result of simulations in training. And she observed that it's not uncommon when the co-pilot, that is the second in command, perceives a problem that the captain isn't perceiving, the co-pilot would often be indirect in his way of calling attention to the problem. And sometimes the captain would actually miss it and in some cases, an accident would result. As a result of Charlotte Lindy's research, she actually worked with NASA on this, they instituted training of co-pilots to be more direct in their communication with captains when they perceived a potential problem. We read Charlotte Lindy's work in a seminar I taught one time, and a Japanese student commented, well, instead of training the co-pilots to be more direct, why don't they train the pilots to be more attuned to indirect communication? And I found this very interesting and perceptive. We are all inclined to think one way of communication is good and the other is not good. Our way is the one we usually think is good, and other people's way is what we usually think is not good. In reality, any conversational style works well when it's shared. When the style is shared, what you say and what the other person hears tends to be fairly congruent. So directness or indirectness, either one can work well so long as both people understand how it's being used and agree on its use. It's hard, but it is crucial to recognize that styles of directness and indirectness that are different from our own are, in fact, valid. In fact, to see them as styles rather than as evidence of the other person's negative, in some cases, personality, abilities, or intentions. So understanding directness and indirectness is something that's going to be helpful in approaching all conversations, as will the topic that we'll be looking at in the next lecture, which is the music of talk, the rhythms of pacing, pausing, silence, and interruption.
After listening to Lecture 5, a student posed this question to Professor Tannen. Isn't it obvious that indirectness is a sign of insecurity? Let's listen to the professor's response.
I'm really glad you asked that. To many people, it seems self-evident that indirectness is a sign of insecurity. And you see this in particular in the workplace. And in my own research, I found that women managers were much more likely to be indirect in giving orders to subordinates. But it was just as logical to the women that the women often explained to me, I give orders in this way because I'm secure. I don't need to throw my weight around. I know that I'm the boss. I know that my secretary has to do what I tell her to do. So I can tell her in a way that's polite to her, she's going to do it because I'm secure. Now, these guys that go around throwing their weight around, being bossy and being overbearing in their way of telling people what to do, one woman said to me, the way he tells me what to do, I feel like I'm supposed to click my heels and say, yes, sir. He must really be insecure that he has to take on these airs. So it's a theme that runs through just about all the conversational style features that I talk about. It seems so self-evident to us sometimes to draw psychological interpretations like security, insecurity, hostility, manipulative. These are all examples of these psychological interpretations. And sometimes, of course, sometimes we are insecure. Sometimes we are manipulative. But very often, the psychological interpretations just mean you're not doing it in the way I would do it. So I'm looking for some psychological reason why you would do it that way. And I think that's the what I would say with regard to indirectness. There are entire cultures where that operate, and Japanese, Chinese would be Thai, many Asian cultures would be examples, where everybody operates on a very subtle system of indirectness. It's not because the entire culture is suffering from one large inferiority complex, but that it works because it's shared.
This ends Lecture 5.